While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone tuned in from all corners of our beautiful country. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of meaningful conversations and bold national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Reader News Analysis, the program where we move beyond headlines into the heartbeat of the nation. It is Thursday, the 4th of December, 2025, and the time is 6 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. We are deep into the final month of the year, that moment when the country takes stock, when leadership is tested, and when the consequences of policy decisions start to reveal themselves on the ground. It's a period where performance reports meet public expectations, and where Namibians are watching closely to see what will be carried into 2026 and what must urgently change. Now, across the nation today, conversations are intensifying, from the state of service delivery and the government efficiency to economic pressures facing families to the leadership shifts shaping Namibia's governance, mining, industrial, and energy trajectory. It's a week where clarity is demanded, where accountability is non-negotiable, and where citizens want more than promises, they want impact. And that's exactly why we are here on the Radar. It's not just about news, it's a lens, a dedicated space where we unpack the policies behind decisions, interrogate the priorities of those in power, and examine how national developments shape your daily life, whether you are seated behind a desk navigating the lunchtime rush or listening from a quiet village road in rural Namibia. From now until 14:30, expect sharp analysis, grounded insights and voices that matter. We'll bring you thoughtful commentary, expert breakdowns, and lived experiences that cut through the noise and help you understand what this moment means for the country's future. Now remember, you can catch us live across all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app, and stay engaged through our WhatsApp channel, where you'll find instant updates and behind-the-scenes conversations that help keep you part of the national dialogue. So settle in, Namibia. It's Thursday, the momentum is building, and the national story is unfolding in real time. This is your space to think, to reflect, and to engage with what truly matters. This is On The Radar. Now let's get right into today's top stories. President Netumbonane Ndaitwah has officially opened the first cabinet retreat of the 8th administration at the Namibia Institute of Public Administration and Management, that is NIPAM, issuing a firm call for government to shift from planning to visible, measurable action. Held under the theme, Enhancing Policy Coordination, Governance and Service Delivery for Accelerated National Development, the retreat brings together cabinet ministers, senior officials and technical teams to refine government priorities as Namibia enters a new political term. Now, in her opening remarks, President Tumwana Ndaitwah expressed gratitude for the recent electoral victory, but reminded leaders that the mandate is not symbolic. It is a charge to deliver quality services that citizens can express in their homes, in their workplaces and communities. Now, she stressed the urgent need for tighter coordination across ministries in line with the objectives of NDP6 and the Swapo Party election manifesto. The president urged ministries with overlapping responsibilities to plan jointly, act jointly, and deliver jointly, saying the era of siloed decision-making must come to an end. Now, speaking at NIPAM this morning is also Prime Minister Elia Ngurayere. Let's take a listen to him, and then thereafter we'll come and have a listen to what the president said.
I'm happy to welcome you to this historic moment of the 8th administration on the eve of the first cabinet retreat under the leadership of our fifth and first female president of the Republic of Namibia. This is the first cabinet retreat of the eighth administration. For some of us, this is the first cabinet retreat, but the work is not new. The clock of serving the Namibian people is not new. The bread and butter issues of youth empowerment, rural development, informal settlement development, and genuine economic empowerment are the same. I recall, Comrade Secretary General, in 2010, we were then as a youth league, we were informed of the cabinet retreat that was going to take place in Swakopmund. We convened an emergency meeting of the National Executive Committee. And we wanted to give what we then termed a part course that must accompany the Secretary General and the Deputy Secretary General to Wolfish Bay. And by then it was Comrade Nangolo Mbumba, Deputy Secretary General. We gave him a document in order to deliver to Comrade Mfikepunye Pohamba, then President of the Republic. In it, we anchored service delivery as the cornerstone to overcome youth unemployment, and therefore to actualize the promises at the time of 2009 Swapo Party election victory. Yesterday was 2010, today is 2025. The common denominator still remains service delivery. Comrade President, in 2025, what we spoke then is, and so far as youth empowerment is concerned, you are walking the talk. On the aspect of youth development fund, on the aspect of subsidized education coming 2026, I am encouraged when I saw the Ministry of Finance in the past few weeks, they have begun to sensitize and create awareness to all young people across the country. I saw the one for Kietman Shop, and the PRO of the ministry spoke very well and articulated the matters very well. Ministry of Finance and your team, let's give them a round of applause. Your Excellency, you have met each of us one on one, and you have given us terms of reference exactly on service delivery. You have guided, over the past 10 months, you have shared your humanity with us. You have guided and ignited us to deliver to the Namibian people. I therefore, Comrade President, want on behalf of my colleagues in Cabinet to thank you for your leadership, tutelage, patience, and guidance. Let's give Her Excellency a round of applause. Comrade President, I have worked closely with each of the Cabinet members during the compilation of the 3 months report and on daily basis on the execution rate of respective OMAS for capital projects and general performance thereon. Comrade President, their commitment, hard work, dedication in the service of the Namibian people is world class. Let's give these cabinet ministers a round of applause. I therefore myself and local authorities for their support. Above all, to thank the Namibian people especially for the resounding support, even though the Prime Minister should not be speaking politics, I suppose, but it is a political season. For the resounding support that the Namibian people have given to SWAPO and to the President in the just ended regional and local authority elections, giving Her Excellency and the party the overwhelming mandate to govern and thereby to deliver service to the people on issues of bread and butter. Your Excellency, Comrade President, congratulations. Comrade Secretary General Simply Sophie and your team, congratulations. This cabinet retreat, therefore, is anchored on 7 priority areas of the 8th administration upon which our people plant their genuine hope, especially our young people. Our people are confident in their aspirations and appreciation of what has been achieved in the past 10 months and what has been achieved in the past 35 years and the foundation that has been built. The timing of this cabinet retreat, Comrade President, therefore, couldn't have been better than now. The people have spoken. Now it's hard work. And hard work starts with this cabinet retreat. The meal has been served. We must now pay the bill. Payment means we must deliver the services we have promised our people over the next 5 years. We must formulate the best strategies that ensure full implementation of the 2025-2030 Swapo Party Election Manifesto, which, of course, as you know comprehensively, is fused in the NDP 6. We cannot afford to fail this time around, just as Deputy Secretary General of the party has said recently. The effective and efficient policy coordination across all OMAS, regional councils, local authorities, and public enterprises. And I'm aware that the public enterprises CEOs are also here, is that correct? Yes, let's give them a round of applause. And the honorable governors are here to represent the regional councils. And the local authorities, of course, are represented by the upper youth, the line minister. And we are therefore, collectively, in that order, we cannot betray the trust the people have placed in us as a ruling party, in us as a government. Our resolve to timelessly deliver services to the people should therefore stem from the fact that we should regard this overwhelming victory as the last chance Namibians should ever give us before we clock the important year of 2030. In 5 years, we'll have no acceptable excuses to explain our failure to deliver. In fact, failure should be out of our vocabulary. Overwhelmingly, victory comes with high expectations from the people, and rightly so. We must deliver on our promises. There are no two ways about it. Your Excellency, this cabinet retreat is themed, and I quote, enhancing policy coordination, governance, and service delivery for accelerated national development, and unquote. To achieve this, strengthening coordination between political and administrative leadership becomes the backbone of the successful implementation of NDP 6 and other accompanying development programs. We must continue to work as a team, together as one team, coordinating and improving synergies like the best Brazilian soccer teams. Our shared aim is to win. Winning means delivering services to the people. Winning means we should not work in silos. We should communicate and pass on tasks timely for execution and implementation, whether at national, regional, or local government levels. This calls for teamwork. The bedrock of teamwork is trust. Trust is earned through informed cooperation. This should be our daily meal. Most importantly, Comrade President, we should remove procurement bottlenecks in all OMAS, regional councils, local authorities, and state-owned enterprises to accelerate service delivery. Since assuming office as Prime Minister in March this year, I have extensively traveled throughout the length and breadth of this country. Everywhere I went, procurement was a cancerous disease that knocks off balance many of our development programs on service delivery. That Mr. Procurement, or to be gender balanced, Mr. or Mrs. Procurement hangs over every service delivery door like the proverbial sword of Damocles. Our financial year starts in April and ends in March every year. But if it takes 6 or 7 months to procure the resources we need to implement development projects, then obviously we expect monumental failure. That is what offends the expectations of our people. This must end. It is you and I here today who must end it. Mr. or Mrs. Procurement must come under our magnifying glasses at this cabinet retreat. Let us be frank and remove all bottlenecks that stand in our way. Frankness, as they say, does not kill friendship. We must be frank with ourselves, with one another, call a spade, and look at our shared agenda with one vision as a collective unit. What brings us together as politicians is willingness to serve the people to the best of our ability, as we have promised. On the 18th July this year, in this very hall of NIPAM, or as we have baptized it recently, the UNAM of NIPAM, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa addressed public servants and told them, and I quote, "If you do not have passion for the people, if you see citizens as a burden, and if you believe your office is a space for your personal comfort zone, for enrichment or side business, then you are at the wrong place. I must therefore ask you, why are you in the public service? Create space for those who are ready to serve the people," unquote. That was the meal Her Excellency gave to public servants on that day. This cabinet retreat is for us as politicians to reflect comprehensively on how we can coordinate our work as political heads of the ministries we are tasked to lead. The political heads can only succeed if public servants support them, and vice versa. The political head in the regions as governors, they too can only succeed if public servants support them, vice versa. We should not be stumbling blocks when it comes to service delivery. We should not be the source of tears our people shed every day. We should not be the reasons there are no houses, water, medicines, roads, classrooms, clinics, hospitals, sanitation, electricity, security, formal settlement, and other essential amenities. We should be the reason people wake up happy as they daily go about their work and lives. That should be our mission as Team Namibia. For example, perhaps in accelerating housing provision, the local authorities should consider that government entities like NHE get free land for development in order for low-income homeowners to get it affordably. Let there be synergy between local and regional and central government aspirations for national development inclusions in SOEs. Why should MESAC, the ministry responsible for constructing schools and hostels, why should MOS, Ministry of Health, why should they buy land from local authorities in order to put up schools and clinics that benefit precisely those local authorities as well as the people wherein those institutions are? On our part, as the Office of the Prime Minister, under the direction of our President, we avail ourselves to be a conduit to facilitate coordinate all OMAS, regional and local authorities, as well as public enterprises. We have already started, as was indicated here when we met during the public servant's address by Her Excellency. We have witnessed the stems of learning and the heart for humanity. The wind of service delivery is now felt in all 121 constituencies throughout the country. Last week, as we have indicated, people voted the way they did out of many political choices, precisely because we have not been found wanting since taking office in March under the leadership of Her Excellency. We should not lose that space and momentum. What is required now and what this cabinet retreat should strengthen is continued unity of purpose, disciplined implementation, and results-oriented mindset across the public service, where political heads and administrative executives work together as one team to create wealth, promote equity, and shared prosperity. As politicians and public servants, we must share a passion about our common future where Namibia is our shared business. In closing, in her inaugural speech in March, President Nandi Ndaitwa said, and I quote, "We must make a success of our country. We must work together as a united people with one heart and one mind. We all need to put our hands on the plow. There is a role for everyone. I implore every citizen, regardless of your background or political affiliation, to join me on this journey."
And there you had it from Prime Minister Elia Ngurayere. We're now joined in studio telephonically by Saki Johannes, who is an analyst. A very good afternoon to you, Saki Johannes. It's a pleasure to have you with us on the Reading News Analysis yet again.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, Saki Johannes, the 8th administration, of course, today met for the first, opened its first cabinet retreat. In regards to, I think, assessing their how they do the work. And, of course, the president is calling on action rather than obviously just having to give good words and into the people's ears. But let me hear from you as an analyst, Johannes. How exactly do you think perhaps the 8th administration can measure tangible results of their workers, of their employees, that is to say the government employees? Just exactly what measures perhaps can be put in place to make sure that the work is actually ongoing?
Thank you for the question. I think, first of all, I would like to say something before I answer the question. It's not really, I would say, it's too early for me for us to determine whether these guys are doing a good job or not, but looking at what they're doing, one would say, yeah, so far so good. But something that we should also think about now, coming to your question, is the question of accountability. Are we holding our people accountable, our citizens held accountable? That's number one. Number two, we have also to put up measures that to make sure that we have a service delivery to our people, and not only to make it a media thing, that we only go to certain places when you have to show the media that we are doing this, but we must really have an impact, and as a community and as people must already, really see that there's impact here, the people are being held accountable, and the service delivered to the people as they promised to.
I do appreciate that point, but you know what? We have a scheduled commercial break. Let's take that now, and then we'll be back to continue on this conversation. Stay on the line, Saki.
Okay.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
You've leveled up in life, and now it's time to level up your contact. MTC is changing the game with our new contract data plans. More data, more voice minutes, and more SMSs. Core of everything you need. Plans start from just $199 per month. And for a limited new customer's score, an extra 10 gigabytes of data valid for 90 days, absolutely free. Don't wait. Visit any MTC mobile home or call 1200 to level up today. MTC, make the connection.
Always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up.
Okay, and we are back. Saki Johannes, are you still there?
Yes, I'm clear.
Mm. Okay. One point I pick up from what you just said, that it's too early to actually determine whether they are doing great work or falling behind or whatnot. I agree with that because it's been only 8 months, so to say. Yeah. And of course, you spoke also about, in answer to my question of how we can really measure whether they are doing the work or not. But all in all, Saki Johannes, of course, we hear the minister, we hear the president talk, on economic transformation and job creation. Just, I think yesterday we saw in the media about, a position for eight posts, of which 500 people applied, came to actually apply. Just that number alone, that difference alone, what is that speaking about the work that still needs to be done? Of course, we know that there's a long way to go, but what is that saying to where society is right now in terms of our country, measuring obviously employment level?
Yes, thank you. I think first of all, we have to look at what I've said in the beginning, that sometimes you should not just say things because we are in front of the media, but you have to look at statistic-wise. You know, numbers don't lie. So now for us to analyze the impact of someone who got in the office or a certain administration that is in the office is to look at, is the number of unemployment in the country decreasing or is it increasing? Government is increasing, then we should have questions. It's a priority. Okay, but why is it there's no change? So we should see the number of unemployment rate decreasing and the number of standard of living in the country increasing. And things must have a positive, there should be a positive change, a positive response, a positive thing that you have to look up to. Mm-hmm. But like I used to say, numbers don't lie. Yeah.
You're right. We should look, in other words, this are sort of like indicators that would tell us whether we're making progress or not, to say, are the number of employment decreasing or how is it actually going? Is it almost the same thing? Of course, we've heard that the Ministry of Health and Social Services is soon to recruit about 2,000, health care workers and bring them, of course, into the system. But then also now, how also perhaps can we be able to balance it? At the end of the day, of course, we don't want a certain group of people benefiting more opposed to the others. How do you think perhaps the 8th administration, of course, learning also from experiences of others in the past, how can they do better maybe to ensure that everybody gets to eat on, gets a piece of the cake?
We should, especially when it comes to employment, that is a challenge that we have, not only in Namibia, but it's an African problem. But in many cases, people that are recruited in certain positions are not people that deserve those positions just because they know who and who and the issue of their names, it has been there. But I think we should focus more on merit. You should be given a post because you deserve it. Fairness as well. When we are advertising those posts, if a person is qualified for the post, they pass the interview, then you should give people those posts. That's number one. And number two, as a government also, you cannot fight unemployment with just creating job opportunities. We should also look at other sectors, maybe agricultural sectors. How can we empower those young people by equipping them with agricultural knowledge? Or those that have agricultural knowledge as well, how can we fund them to start their agricultural businesses and also the creative industry? How can we fund them? Because that's another way, like if young people can be empowered to create their own companies and then given skills and knowledge, then they can recruit other young people. I think that way we can also fight unemployment as well.
Yeah. That's true. Okay. Now, speaking about that, unemployment and, of course, agriculture. I mean, we are talking about food security and whatnot. And before I think I come to that, let me first ask this question. What would you say about today's retreat? You know, in my opinion, it's always very good when you sit down with your employees as an employer and actually talk about the goals in case perhaps one of them has forgotten the vision or is lagging behind. Just sort of like a booster to actually get the work again starting and going in that kind of manner. So I think I will upload also how the 8th administration is doing now and the president alongside with others trying to obviously talk about this again into putting their words into action. So just why such things of very significance, Johannes, to sit down on the table and relook at what we have planned, relook at NDP6, relook at the party's manifesto. Why is it very important?
First of all, I would say that's a refresh. So it's you have to look at those documents to refresh your people and to tell them that, look, like what the president has said, that we have a contract with Namibian people. People trusted us. Therefore, we should deliver on our promises. And then she used a word that I really like, implementation. So the problem that you have as leaders, as a society, sometimes it's implementation. Plans are there. You can go at a certain ministry and then you look at their plans. They are there. But the problem is implementation. And the question that we have, are we implementing, or we are just throwing up good plans, but there's no implementation? Because without implementation, then there's no result. From where, if there's no action? So I think this is a good thing. And overall, I would say so far in the past 8 months, the president for me is doing a great job for the country. Jealous down. You know, he even won an award recently at the African Magazine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So, and the Minister of Health also won. So for me, that's an administration that is giving a positive response so far to the Namibian people, and it's something that is we have to be curious of, and then you have to give them time before we decide whether they have done good or not. But I think if they happen to keep up the way they are doing things, we might see change in our country.
I agree with you. Saki Johannes, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you also and hear your insights and your thoughts and, of course, step into your world of thinking. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. And then we had it from analyst Saki Johannes, also just giving us his thoughts and his insights on today's retreat. Let's now take a listen to President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah's speech at the retreat at NIPAM. But before that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabwiri nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
and
it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah speaking at the first cabinet retreat of the 8th administration, for this spoke about the implementation, that it must be the heartbeat of her administration, calling for urgency, cohesion, and practical results-driven approach to service delivery. Economic transformation and job creation, particularly for Namibia's youth, remain at the center of this 8th administration, as they said. Now, the president has underscored the importance of national unity, social cohesion, and ethical leadership, making it clear that corruption will not be tolerated. Now, every public resource, she emphasized, must be managed with transparency and integrity. Today's retreat, she noted, is an opportunity for cabinet to reflect, to realign, and to recommit to the work ahead as the administration steers the country toward 2026. Let's take a listen to the President of the Republic of Namibia, Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah.
It has been 8 months plus since we were sworn in as members of cabinet and governors for the 8th administration, where it is business as usual. I want to sincerely thank all of you for your hard work, collectively and individually. Clearly, as the Prime Minister has mentioned, your hard work has not gone unnoticed by our people. Hence, the resounding victory gained by SWAPO Party, the ruling party, following the just held regional and local authority elections. I sincerely thank all of you for the job well done. However, such victory must not be taken for granted. It is a strong further call by our people to all of us in positions of responsibilities, both the political office bearers and civil servants, to make an extra effort to bring about quality service delivery. What we have achieved thus far is a beginning of a long journey, and that confidence the people of Namibia have shown to us, we should not betray them. Accordingly, on this occasion, which is now the cabinet retreat, we must step back, reflect, and realign our collective efforts. That is to say, this retreat provides a strategic platform to sharpen our focus, strengthen cohesion, and recommit ourselves to the priorities that matter the most to the Namibian nation, as articulated in SWAPO Party Election Manifesto and operationalized in NDP-6. Against that backdrop, I urge you all to share insight on issues central to strengthening governance and improving service delivery, aimed at bringing changes to the quality of life and livelihood of all Namibians. Looking at the agenda before us, the discussions will cover both the political and administrative interface between political heads and all other sectors, aiming at enriching our collective understanding and providing a strong foundation for a common approach to reach our common goals in the service of our people. Director of Ceremonies, the theme, Enhancing Policy Coordination, Governance and Service Delivery for Accelerated National Development, is not only timely, but it's also instructive. This reminds us of our collective responsibility to initiate policies that respond to the needs of all Namibians while reviewing laws, policies, and regulation that hamper the effective implementation of our plans and program. Equally, the theme calls for on us to strengthen alignment in decision making, improve coordination across ministries and offices, refine governance structures, and ensure that policy development and service deliveries move in unison to produce tangible outcome for the people in the informal settlements, villages, towns, and municipalities across Namibia. I have no doubt that different presenters will go deeper on the subject matter to assist us to handle issues of national interest from an informed position that will be translated into effective implementation. I must emphasize that implementation requires effective execution and must be the heartbeat of the eighth administration. Good policies without implementation are just as good as nothing. As they do not change people's lives, it is therefore my considered opinion that from this retreat we will be more sharpened to move with urgency beyond planning to action, delivering practical results that citizens can feel and see. It is my hope that from our discussions in the 2 days at our disposal, we will appreciate the importance of interministerial collaboration and embrace joint planning where responsibilities overlap. As we might all know, united, coordinated approach will always yield better outcomes. Director of Ceremony, we meet at the time when economic transformation is essential for job creation, particularly for the youth, and must remain at the forefront. Therefore, from this retreat, we must be able to further identify all the challenges and turn them into opportunities to meet the promises we made to our people, including job creation. As we start this retreat, it's important to underscore that national unity and social cohesion remain the fundamental of our country's stability. The cabinet must continue to promote unity, respect, and cooperation across all sectors of our society. Our tone, our decisions, and our public engagement shape the national atmosphere. Let us continue upholding Namibia's values of peace, tolerance, and mutual respect, as demonstrated during the elections. We have seen how peaceful it was from the campaign period to the election days and even post-elections. Ethical leadership is non-negotiable. Corruption in all its form undermines public trust and diverts resources meant for development. As leaders, we must demonstrate integrity, transparency, and moral clarity. Every public resources must be managed with care, and every decision must reflect fairness and accountability. Our example as cabinet members, deputy ministers, governors, executive directors, all civil servants must inspire confidence throughout the public service. The work we do today is not for ourselves, but for the future generation. I expect that each of us leaders will lead with purpose, guided by the belief that a strong Namibia is possible through our collective efforts. Director of Ceremonies, as I conclude these opening remarks, I call upon all of you to approach this 2 days meeting here with renewed energy, focus, and unity of purpose. Our takeaways from this meeting will definitely ignite our mindset as we proceed to the 2026 cabinet for continued improved service delivery to the Namibian people. And that's why we are having this retreat just before we break for holiday. So that during the holiday, as we are quiet in our corners, we can reflect on these discussions. And when we come back, we are more refreshed and we are going to move faster than what we did thus far. The success of the 8th administration depends on our ability to work together, to act decisively, and to deliver on the promises we as the leaders have made to the Namibian people through the SWAPO Party election manifesto and its implementation plan, which has been translated into NDP-6. Let us use this retreat as a turning point for enhanced performance and strengthened commitment to service. Let me also thank our presenters and once again our director of ceremonies for having accepted to help us to go through our program.
Now, the message is clear from the president, the head of state, that work together, act decisively, deliver on the promises made to the Namibian people. However, I am wondering within myself to see, perhaps could this retreat maybe not have been better earlier in the beginning of 2026? But like she said, she preferred it that they have it now, so that when they are on holiday and quiet, maybe they can be thinking of strategies how to come back bigger and better. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Lipura nenge leo wapungwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo Iho etike kovano hile koshuwala Unongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa Mune uto otukwetira o special ange Tashake ngeshe faa omarude dayo loka Opone ushe ndife nawa nukumona oijamweri nawa Ninge Pada Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back. You are still tuned into On the Radar News Analysis. Now, according to the Namibia Statistics Agency, Namibia's headline annual inflation rate rose to 3.4% in November 2025, up from 3.0% recorded during the same period last year. Now, this according to the latest figures released for the month under review, that is the month of November 2025. Now, on a monthly basis, inflation remained unchanged at 0.0%, a notable slowdown from the 0.5% recorded in October. Economists say the flat monthly movement suggests price stability in key consumer categories, despite persistent pressures in others. Now, on regional breakdown, the latest data reveals slightly variations across the country's inflation zones, with Zone 1 covering Kavango East, Kavango West, Kunene, Ohangwena, Omsati, Oshana, Oshikoto, Snjupa, and Zambezi recorded the lowest annual inflation rate at 3.3%. Now, Zone 2, which consists of Commerce Region, and Zone 3, comprising Karas, Erongo, Hardap, and Omaeke, each posted an inflation rate of 3.4%. A comparison of average retail prices for selected products shows notable differences across the regions. For beef stew per kilogram, consumers paid 101.39 in Zone 2, with which is the lowest price, and 113.45 cents in Zone 3 and 113.49 cents in Zone 1 being the highest price. Now, for onions per kilogram, the trend reversed. Zone 2 consumers paid the highest price at 22.90 cents Namibian dollars, while Zone 1 paid 19 Namibian dollars and 33 cents, while Zone 3 paid the lowest price at 18 Namibian dollars and 30 cents. Now, these variations signal the uneven distribution of food price pressures across the country, influenced by transport costs, supply chains, and local market dynamics. Co-inflation, on the other hand, which excludes the volatile items such as food and energy products like gas, paraffin, methylated spirits, charcoal, and coal, stood at 3.6%, slightly above the headline rate. Now, this measure provides a clearer picture of underlying price trends by filtering out fluctuations driven by weather conditions, supply disruptions, or global geopolitical tensions. Now, economists say the latest inflation figures show moderate price increases overall, though disparities across regions highlight ongoing structural challenges in Namibia's retail and consumer good markets.
The Namibia Statistics Agency has just released its latest inflation report for the month of November 2025, whereby the headline annual inflation rate increased to 3.4% compared to 3% inflation rate recorded in November 2024. Now, on a monthly basis, inflation stood at 0% compared to 0.5% observed in the preceding month. The zonal inflation rates for the month of November 2025 revealed that Zone 1, which is Kavango East, Kavango West, Kunene, Oangwena, Umsati, Oshana, Oshkoto, Ochoto Njupa, and Zambezi, recorded the lowest annual inflation rate at 3.3% compared to Zone 2, which is the Commerce region, and Zone 3, which is Karas, Irongo, Hardap, and Omaheke, with each recording 3.4%. An analysis of average retail prices for selected products revealed that consumers in Zone 2 paid the least price for beef stew per kg, that is at 101 Namibian dollars and 39 cents, followed by Zone 3 at 113 Namibian dollars and 45 cents, while Zone 1 consumers paid 113 Namibian dollars and 49 cents. Additionally, consumers in Zone 2 paid the highest price for onions per kg at 22 Namibian dollars and 90 cents, followed by Zone 1 at 19 Namibian dollars and 33 cents, while Zone 3 consumers paying the lowest price at 18 Namibian dollars and 30 cents.
Let's pause here shortly. We'll be back now with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give...
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. Where about you?
The fraud is a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who knows does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back and brace yourself for news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa. As you always start off regionally, move over to continental news. And thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, South Africa, on the other hand, says sexual offences court is set to be launched in Botshabelo Free State.
Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, Mameluke Kubai, will preside over the launch of a new sexual offences court in Botshabelo Free State province. Kubai will also lead the distribution of toys and children's books collected during the nationwide justice sector charity drive. Let's cross over to SABC News reporter Kamakhelo Tsotsi for more on the story. Kamakhelo, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Leanne, and also our viewers. This morning we are actually outside the Magistrates Court where we are waiting for the Minister of Justice to actually come through and preside over the launch of the Sexual Offences Court. But right now we're still waiting for the Minister who has not arrived. But then what I can tell you is today we are going to ask the Minister actually what we can expect about this Sexual Offences Court that is opening today, and also what it means for the community of Botshabelo, and why did she choose to roll out this program in Botshabelo before rolling it out to other parts of the country. But for now, we're still waiting for the minister. The community members are still trickling in at this place, Leanne. And then, as you remember, the minister will also later on join the president for that men's indaba in Bloemfontein. But with that, for now, it's just back to you, Leanne.
All right. Kamakhelo, let's leave it there. Thanks so much. We'll look forward to your reporting throughout the day.
South Africa's health ombudsman report reveals systemic failures in South Africa's healthcare system.
Edward Mabubula, a former medical doctor. The health ombud found that the Wits Donald Gordon Medical Center in Johannesburg had been informally removing venous cord needles after hours, a long-running breach of health regulations and the hospital's own protocols.
Donald Gordon had a long-standing informal courtesy practice of removing venous ports needles after chemotherapy that were carried out outside regular hours where no patient files were created or retrieved to document the clinical status and the procedure carried out on patients on the day, ostensibly in order to save patients for payment of hospital fees.
One of the investigation's most troubling finding is that at the Pietersburg Provisional Tertiary Hospital involving patient Piti Rampele, Rampele was never seen by a doctor despite being referred to the hospital. The investigation also found that staff at the hospital were leaving patients unattended and sent home.
After assessment by the nurses at 3:30, the patient was referred to the for the doctor's examination. But all doctors had left before he could be seen. Security guards instructed the patients to go home, and therefore the findings that the health ombud made is that the allegation that Mr. Rampele was not seen by the doctor was substantiated.
Oh, okay. The investigation also revealed falsified patient records, a finding that drew strong condemnation from the health minister.
What will you say if you go to hospital and your records are altered? I'm sure you'll never accept that. You'll actually be very angry. So I am also very angry because I don't want to work with hooligans in the healthcare system, because patients go there to them with trust.
Family says they are happy about the findings and recommendations, but personal closure will take time.
You know, closure is something else. I was just saying to the minister that he has a twin brother. It was their birthday on the 1st of December. I was even scared to say happy birthday to him. So closure is something that you, on an individual basis, yes. But down the line, we will. As long as we know that somebody won't go through the same issue that we have gone through, then we'll be able to get closure.
The Health Ombud has made several recommendations which both hospitals must implement. These include formalizing protocols, including the creation of proper patient files, full clinical documentation, and a mediation process with both families. Zinebo Telezi, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Nonetheless, South Africa has strengthened relations with Mozambique.
Maphosa says his meeting with President Chapo also discussed how the two countries can increase trade. He says Mozambique is a host to more than 300 South African companies. The president added that Pretoria is keen to see more Mozambican investment in South Africa.
Energy cooperation between our two countries is a central pillar of our economic cooperation. The Cahora-Bassa hydroelectric dam makes an important contribution to South Africa's energy security. South Africa commends Mozambique for the Mbanda Nguwa hydropower project. We stand ready to explore partnership opportunities in this project as well.
Ramaphosa says another critical area of cooperation is the development of natural gas.
A good example of effective public-private partnership is the gas cooperation signed by South Africa and Mozambique in 2004 with Sasol as a joint venture partner.
Meanwhile, Ramaphosa, as the interim chairperson of SADC, has expressed the concern about the intractable security situation in the DRC, the civil war in Sudan, the political impasse in South Sudan.
We also continue to observe political developments in one of our sister countries, or two of our sister countries, Tanzania and Madagascar. We must redouble our efforts to tackle the threat posed by terrorism and extremism. At the same time, we must strive for global peace, for stability, for justice and respect for international law.
Ramaphosa has urged the continent to continue to advance peace through dialogue, mediation and peacekeeping. Ditabosotezi, SABC News.
Today is a testament.
Zambia has strengthened medical cooperation with West China University and Hospital.
The strong and growing partnership between Zambia and the People's Republic of China in the field of health. We deeply value the commitment of West China University and the West China Hospital to advancing medical cooperation, knowledge exchange, and innovation that directly benefits our people. This visit builds upon the fruitful discussions held during my recent tour of the West China Hospital, and it demonstrates the continuity of our shared vision to strengthen institutional collaboration, expand telemedicine services, and invest in the training and the development of medical talent. We are particularly encouraged by the progress already made, such as the operationalization of a telemedicine consultation services at the International Hospital of Zambia and the sister hospital agreement with Levi Mwanawasa University Hospital. These initiatives concrete steps towards improving health care delivery and building capacity within our health system. As we engage in strategic consultations during your visit, we look forward to exploring ways to expand telemedicine nationally, enhance medicine research collaboration.
What we want to aspire to see if we can reach that level of and also to leverage during the research, we can see how we can produce the artificial intelligence models into our sales provision. So that we help the lower levels in terms of interpreting what they are seeing, they need to explain the diversity.
Your visit not only enhanced medical trust but also charted a clear blueprint for our future cooperations. Our hospital has been actively implementing the High Quality Belt and Road Initiative and has engaged in medical cooperation with several African countries. We are willing to take this visit as a new starting point to jointly promote practical cooperation in key areas such as technology sharing, clinical training, high-level medical talent cultivation, and joint scientific research in Zambia side.
And in other news, suspected blackmail gang operating on Grindr has been uncovered in BBC investigation.
Recognize this noise? If so, then you're probably already familiar with Grindr. But if not, let me explain. It's a social networking app used by millions of gay and bisexual men around the world, and it's most famous for hookups and sharing nudes. But I've been investigating a darker side to Grindr, and the tragic consequences of what happens when it gets into the wrong hands.
I shouted through the door, sort of, who are you? You know, what do you want?
That's Cameron, and he got in touch with me this summer to ask me to look into the death of his partner, Scott, who he believes was being blackmailed using Grindr. What we discovered was a suspected gang who have targeted multiple men using the app, but have yet to be arrested.
We're sort of like chalk and cheese, but in a good way, and we just got on, it just worked.
Cameron and Scott were together for almost 15 years.
Planning to spend the rest of our life together. We have obviously Otis, our little dog. Yeah, sort of making a little family. What's this?
But in March last year, Cameron's life was turned upside down.
Chicken.
While he was waiting for Scott to return home from work, a gang of six men turned up at their door, demanding the keys to his new car.
I shouted through the door, sort of, who are you? You know, what do you want? They were quite vocal in the respect that they were looking for a white Range Rover, and the person with the white Range Rover said they'd left a note on the doorstep with a mobile number. The note reads, it's in your best interest to give me a call.
The next day, Scott took his own life.
When I returned home, his car wasn't on the driveway, and I saw his blue notepad open on the table with his final will and testament that he'd handwritten. I then remember going, obviously, upstairs to check, and that's when I found him in the bedroom on the bed.
Cameron told police he believed Scott may have been the victim of blackmail linked to his use of Grindr, but he felt that officers didn't take him seriously enough.
I felt when that came up in conversation, it was almost like a disregard. It's been lack of interest, lack of intent to know, lack of knowledge, lack of understanding.
But a BBC News investigation has seen police documents that add significant weight to Cameron's suspicions about the gang. The records reveal that the phone number left on the letter for Scott was already known to Hertfordshire Police after being linked to another blackmail case involving Grindr. They also show that the gang went on to target at least two others within 10 days of Scott's death. In each of the cases, the gang allegedly met men on Grindr and then later falsely claimed to be underage in order to extort money from them. Yet there have been no arrests made.
We knew of one crime that happened before. Just before Scott's, plus two others. That's four.
That's four that have just come forward, or four that they know about, where they could do something. And they why are they not? That's what I struggle to understand. Why are they not?
In a report seen by BBC News, the independent police watchdog said Hertfordshire Police should re-examine the case. It said the force failed to robustly investigate the circumstances surrounding Scott's death, and that officers should examine whether homophobic assumptions and unconscious bias contributed to failures in the investigation. Hertfordshire Police said it's committed to maintaining good working relationships with the LGBTQ plus community, but said it was unable to discuss specific points about Cameron's complaint due to the ongoing reinvestigation.
He was just so happy. He was absolutely fantastic. He was my rock.
Scott's isn't an isolated case. Just 9 weeks after his death and just 20 minutes down the road, student Liam McHale died after confiding in friends and family that he was being blackmailed by a man on Grindr.
He phoned me. He said, I've been blackmailed and I don't want to go to prison. I said, what are you on about? Someone's trying to blackmail me.
Liam told Julie that he was speaking to a 45-year-old man on the app who later falsely claimed to be underage in order to blackmail him.
His friend, Sophie, phoned me. She passed the paramedics on. And she said, well, I'm so sorry, but your son's gone. I thought, no. No. I couldn't believe it.
Julie and her family believe Thames Valley Police haven't properly investigated the possibility Liam's case could be connected to others in the area. She's also grown increasingly frustrated that 18 months on, his laptop and phone have yet to be checked for evidence. One charity has told BBC News that victims are often reluctant to come forward to police, making it almost impossible to know the full scale of these types of crimes.
And they walk into that police station and they mention the word Grindr, there's probably going to be a judgment made about them. And perpetrators know that, and they take advantage of that. We know that there are good police officers, but it's really a lottery, and it depends on who you're dealing with.
A spokesperson for Grindr said it works diligently to provide a safe environment and regularly cooperates with UK law enforcement.
Do you have any faith you'll get any sort of justice for this?
No, I don't think it will. I think it's been too long and they haven't looked into it properly.
Thames Valley Police said it has not received a formal complaint about the investigation. A spokesperson said it takes all concerns seriously, but that it would be inappropriate to comment on individual grievances outside of a formal complaints process, and that an investigation into blackmail offences is still ongoing.
Do you think that the time that this has all taken means that they've missed their opportunity to catch who did this?
Massively. Massively.
Do you have any faith at all that they'll ever find out who that gang were that turned up at your house?
I'd like to think that they had, or at some point something would happen further down the line. It's something I live with every day. It's something that it's altered me and who I am, and it's really become my second language just to fight for answers.
In other news, US Defense Secretary Peter Hegseth is under scrutiny over a second deadly Venezuela boat strike.
To bring you up to date with a story that is the lead story in many U.S. publications today, it's about the relationship right now between the U.S. and Venezuela. The White House defending their Secretary of State, Pete Hegseth, against allegations that in September he instructed the U.S. military to kill everyone on board a suspected Venezuelan drug smuggling vessel. Now, Hegseth reportedly ordered a second airstrike against survivors clinging to wreckage. Some U.S. politicians and former officers say that would constitute a war crime, but the White House insists the strikes were legal.
With respect to the strikes in question on September 2nd, Secretary Hegseth authorized Admiral Bradley to conduct these kinetic strikes. Admiral Bradley worked well within his authority and the law, directing the engagement to ensure the boat was destroyed and the threat to the United States of America was eliminated.
Democratic Senator Tim Kaine says his party is questioning the administration's decisions on Venezuela and says Republicans, too, are joining the call.
We think the escalating pace and some of the recent revelations, so for example, the recent revelation about the kill everyone order apparently dictated by Secretary Hegseth, we do believe that we will get more support for these motions when they are refiled.
The Trump administration maintains that Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro, is a narco-terrorist and has deployed a fleet to the Caribbean.
Victory forever! Victory forever! Victory forever!
Here he is at a rally, Maduro defiantly dismissing increasing pressure from the U.S. He addressed the crowd and said he will remain steadfast and swears absolute loyalty to Venezuelans.
We want peace, but peace with sovereignty, peace with equality, peace with freedom. We do not want a slave's peace, nor a peace with colonies. Colony, never. Slaves, never. Freedom, republic, peace with dignity, that's the peace.
With me now in the studio is Mimi Swaby, our global affairs reporter with expertise and experience in Latin America, and speaking to me as well from Washington as part of our regular U.S. politics series is Andrew Feinberg, White House correspondent for The Independent. Well, Mimi, there were rumors around that Mr. Maduro had fled. I mean, it was all over social media, but there he is, defiant, dancing, saying we do not want peace of slaves, nor do we want peace of colonies. He's been emboldened by all of this, it seems.
He has. This has created the perfect storm for speculation. There are reports that a plane associated with him was on its way to Brazil, but then he made an appearance at a very heavily attended rally in Caracas, where his supporters were really cheering him on. And he's trying to galvanize Venezuelans. It's a time of uncertainty. They have about 15,000 troops and a large military capability just outside their borders. And if you're Maduro, you think they're aiming at you. So he's trying to really get people to come together and see this as an opportunity to cement himself in power. And that's what we're seeing. He's holding on, hunkering down, and hoping that Trump doesn't escalate things further, be that with more strikes at sea or even land strikes, as we've hearing again, more speculation on social media, as well as from sources in the White House.
Andrew, two things to pick up with you there. Possible plans that Trump might have now, but also this increased scrutiny that there is of Pete Hegseth, with some lawmakers accusing him of committing a war crime. What's the focus in the U.S. today?
Well, there are still a lot of questions about this strike that happened on a small boat in September, which the administration has claimed was running drugs. They've offered no evidence of that. They've offered no basis for the strike other than the president's assertion that the U.S. is in what he has called an armed conflict with drug cartels. Now, the White House appears to be throwing a decorated Navy admiral who commanded these troops during the strike under the bus, saying that it was the admiral who gave this order that may have been a war crime to fire on the survivors of the first drone strike on that alleged drug boat. The White House is not budging. Although I will note that they originally denied that there had been a second strike, calling it made up and fake news. But yesterday, the White House confirmed that it had happened, but did not go so far as to say that Pete Hegseth had ordered it.
Okay, we'll come back to what President Trump might do now, given it seems many are saying he's being boxed into a corner, because I wanted to ask you, Mimi, about the public in Venezuela. Really hard to know, of course, but we see Maduro there with quite a large crowd. Is this sort of working for him in that way? Is he managing to galvanize support? Where do people stand?
It appears that if you supported Maduro before this, this has only cemented your support, and it's kind of separated the us and them narrative. Venezuelans are sticking together and Maduro is for Venezuela and Venezuelan people. However, if you were against Maduro, if you were a supporter of the opposition party led by Maria Corina Machado, this US potential military intervention is seen as actually a positive. And that really has swayed recently. Public opinion seems to be shifting that if you don't like Maduro, you see the US intervention as the only way to potentially get him to set down from power. Now, there are some different takes in the opposition party. Marina Machado has basically said that she fully backs Trump's actions, that these deadly attacks at sea, we know they've killed more than 80 people now, are justified for the end goal here. And that's been no secret that the US want Maduro to step down from power. However, other opposition leaders are a little bit more cautious. And that is what we're seeing. They're saying Maduro is running out of options if he stays, if he goes. It doesn't seem that he'll face any guarantee that he won't end up in jail or extradited or see betrayal from the military, who are his greatest asset, it seems, at the moment, protecting him. And if they turn, then Maduro is really exposed. But there is a shifting opinion. People who are against him see the US now as their best option for a new kind of liberated Venezuela rid of Maduro.
Andrew, I see that according to opinion polls, most Americans are against any kind of military intervention in Venezuela. But what is the strategic dilemma for President Trump now? I mean, is he really boxing himself in, given Maduro has refused to go?
Well, the president, during both of his successful campaigns in 2016.
Let's move on to other news, where Vladimir Putin has rejected peace deal on Ukraine after U.S. talks.
NATO's foreign ministers are holding their first meeting in Brussels since a draft peace plan to end the war in Ukraine was proposed. In his opening remarks, its General Secretary, Mark Rutte, condemned Russia's actions and reaffirmed the organization's support for Ukraine as it heads into the winter months. There's been a deepening concern that European allies have been sidelined over the talks, which have been primarily led by Russia and the US. Here's what Mark Rutte said earlier.
We face real and lasting dangers. Russia continues to test our deterrence. Russia has violated our airspace with jets and drones, conducted sabotage, and sent spy ships into our waters. These actions are reckless and they are dangerous. And it's not Russia alone. It is working closely with China, North Korea, and Iran to attempt to disrupt our societies and tear up the global rules. They are preparing for long-term confrontation. And we are responding with strength, unity, and resolve. European allies and Canada are really stepping up defense investments, and that's good. But we cannot afford to rest on our laurels. We all need to pull our weight and fast. We need to develop and buy core capabilities for our defense and invest in industry, in infrastructure, and innovation to stimulate production and boost resilience. We also need to support Ukraine more. Russian missiles keep causing death and destruction, and winter is here. Ukraine needs our support more than ever. We all want the bloodshed to stop, and I strongly welcome President Trump's continued efforts to end this war. Meanwhile, we must accelerate our contributions to Pearl to get urgently needed equipment to Ukraine so that it can defend itself today and prevent aggression in the future.
Mark Rutte. Well, ahead of the meeting, the UK pledged £10 million to support the repair of energy infrastructure in Ukraine that's been damaged by Moscow's attacks. Here's the Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper.
We have seen in recent days President Trump and the US pursue a just and lasting peace for Ukraine and for the Ukrainian people, and for President Zelensky to pursue their willingness for a ceasefire and for a just and lasting peace for Ukraine. But instead, what we have seen is President Putin simply seek to escalate war, and we've seen over the weekend the continuing strikes, the heavy strikes that have led to power being switched off for hundreds of thousands of people. And that is why today I'm announcing the UK's additional £10 million to support energy infrastructure repairs in Ukraine, because whilst President Putin is seeking to switch the lights off and plunge Ukraine into darkness, we will continue to work to switch the lights back on. And we will continue to show our support for the Ukrainian people, for the sovereignty of Ukraine, and for a just and lasting peace with the security of Europe and the security of NATO at its heart. Thank you.
Yvette Cooper. Well, it comes the day after talks in Moscow between President Putin and the US envoy Steve Witkoff ended without a breakthrough. Russian negotiators described the five-hour meeting as productive and useful, but the Kremlin said there was still much work to do. Let's speak to our correspondent, Joel Gunter, who's in Kiev. Where are we left then with these talks, Joel?
We're left a little bit where we were yesterday. There was not a great expectation here in Kyiv of a breakthrough last night. There were, as you mentioned, 5 hours of talks, the language coming out of the Kremlin after that, saying that they were constructive, rich in substance. But it's clear that the Russians still find certain points on this draft peace plan unacceptable. There are still red lines on both sides. I've been speaking to members of the Ukrainian parliament this morning. The feeling here is that any plan that involves Ukraine having to cede territory that Russia hasn't already captured on the battlefield would be a red line. And the other key red line here for the Ukrainians is security guarantees.
And with that, we have officially come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkon Anadini program brought to you by Louise Shimi. From Indafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful Thursday afternoon.